every time I feel a lesson's done, honestly.
But I sure learned a lot. I enjoyed it terribly, learning who went where and what and how they disobeyed God. And still...
What always amazes me is when we get to those end chapters, and he's still talking with them.
I didn't get 21 through the other one.
17 to 21.
Yeah, I didn't get much done on that.
Well, there really isn't much to do. They really just want us to read that. But in some ways, you're kind of swimming through this. When you have a priest, a Levitical priest, that in a man's house with idols, with, you know, I don't understand. And then some guy that comes and steals all of it and takes it to his, and they all have idols, and then now they have a Levitical priest, and he's really happy because he's ministering to more people. Really, I don't think you're ministering to anybody, but you know.
Well, they think that the priest is going to bring them closer to God.
So how does that apply today?
Well, he wasn't even a priest.
It was a weird one. I didn't know what to do with that. And then I couldn't do the historical studies.
Well, historical studies actually are very simple. The statement is, you would ask yourself, why did God write this book? What is going on in that place that would that he wants us to know? So on that basis, what is going on in the book? Just take the first chapter. What was going on there historically? It's history because it is history. But what was going on there that God wanted us to know about? Israel was disobedient.
Joshua died, and that generation died, and the next generation didn't follow the teachings of Moses and the things that God had promised.
And then what do you watch after that?
They go downhill.
That's your historical setting right there.
It was a cycle. They would follow God, they would fall away, they'd be delivered, they would forget God, and it just started again.
And I don't really know that they were following God. I think they were following the leader.
Yeah, they were.
Which, I say that because as soon as the leader dies, they go away.
True.
So if they were following, I mean, I learned actually that as a young Christian. I was I actually was in a very discipleship strong group. I mean, I went and moved down there and lived with, there were probably about 100 of us, and we did. We took 1 year, or that first year. I became a believer in December 8th, and that next summer we did evangelistic teams all up and down California's coast. And so there would be homes. There were 8 homes, and each one of them was guided by a leader. Well, out of that crew, my leader, and. If you ever seen Tom Selleck, he looked just like Tom Selleck. He had just gotten married, and Iris was young, and so I was a young Christian too, but she was young. And I watched their marriage fall apart within a month, literally, and he disappeared. He ran away. He ran up to Northern California, and we had Iris there, and we were supposed to be evangelizing, and we didn't have any leadership. They sent us someone take his place, but that was devastating. I knew him for as long as I had been a Christian. So there was that situation. Then there was another situation. Same kind of thing happened. The husband and wife fell apart. The third one, the guy walked away from it all. There were 3 marriages from that leadership that disintegrated within a year. And there were 4 marriages. Oh my gosh. Anyway, only one stayed, and the other guy was single. So he just stayed single for a while. But at that point, we were all following leaders. You know, you follow your leaders, and these were very charismatic-y kind of people. And I remember that's the lesson I learned before I was a year-old Christian, was you cannot follow people. You cannot follow people. Because when you do follow people, they will fail. That's the reality of life. I don't mean that you don't put leaders as leaders, and I don't mean that you don't obey as God has called you to leadership. But if you put your faith in the leadership rather than Christ through the leadership, Your faith is gonna have problems. You're gonna,
it's idolatry, really.
Well,
can
you
be.
Don't know it's idolatry, but it can be idolatry, and you can do it by watching all the people. I mean, Paul said in Corinthians, you know, I'm not of Paul, I'm not of Apollos, and blah blah blah. Why? Because we have that tendency of lining up behind or under people, and I think Judges is going to give us that picture as we look at it. We can't. Leadership is, it's just like in marriage. There's God. God places within marriage the husband as the head. And if the wife looks at the husband as the head, meaning perfect, there's going to be a marriage of huge struggle because he's not. And what headship means for the wife is a whole different thing than we usually have in Christianity. It's the picture of being that helpmeet. Of the two of you learning how to walk together. For me, I have learned how to trust God through my husband, not because he's going to do it. When we were teasing around about house, who was it talking about? A house, fixing your house. There are things in our house that my beloved promised to fix years ago. And it's not a natural thing for him to do it anyway. I mean, there are some people who have this knowledge, oh, hammer, I know what to do with a hammer, and goes off and do it. Anything he does, he has to work really hard to think about, and in ministry, you don't have that kind of time. So either I can learn how to do it, which is not the smartest thing in my situation. Other people it is, but for me, it makes him feel like a failure. So the best thing for me to do is live in an undone house. And I can show you all the places that are leaks and that are unfinished. And I learned how to live within that because my husband's greater good is not a perfect house. His greater good is ministering to you guys. And so my job is to make that available. And I do that by being fitting in that gap, praying for him, all those other things. So we all have to learn how to work within allowing a leader to grow too. But when we put them on a pedestal, which, by the way, there are plenty of men who like to be, and women, who like to be put on that pedestal, if you know somebody who likes to be put on that pedestal, run as fast as your legs can go. Because that's somebody who's taking away from God and creating idolatry. And, pardon? Well, there's a whole list of them. And yes.
Yeah.
I mean, all you have to do is turn on late night. Well, we don't have a TV now, but like when we've been on vacation, I cannot turn on late night TV because they disgust me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I literally want to go, the fires of hell come up from there, the heavens, and they break, you know. No, that's not a good thing for me to listen to. Justice. Remember I said justice, right? And God says, yeah, justice, but not now. Give them time to change. Okay, I'm trying. But they're just sucking people into it. And it's a lie. Okay, so we're looking at Israel. They come through Joshua. And you were telling me there's a point where the group that came with Joshua is going to die off. But before we get there, let's just take chapter 1 and tell each other, this is part of your homework. What were the names of the tribes who put them together with, and they did not drive out people? Because you got the names. By the way, we have the names of the tribes. Did you see any tribes that weren't there?
Mm-hmm.
What tribes weren't there? No quiet. You can't be quiet in this class. If it's quiet, I can't hear you.
Tribes that weren't on our list,
mm-hmm.
that drove them out.
Well, they just weren't on the list. They did conquer, but we did see them. Were there any tribes we didn't see at all?
Oh, I see.
Well, we had Naphtali in 133. Issachar. We did not have Issachar.
That's right.
I kind of remember the names of that.
Yeah, I know.
Let's come looking for that. It's somewhere to be written.
Well, actually, where you can see it on your map, in case you can't tell, it's actually there. Right there.
Yeah.
See, that's the light writing.
Oh,
that's your pride.
Reuben? Yeah, I don't think Reuben.
No, Reuben. Didn't see Reuben either.
Oh, yeah.
I think those were the two we didn't hear of at all. Okay, so tell me about the tribes that did not get rid of everybody or anybody.
Well, Judah didn't get the inhabitants of the valley driven out.
Nope. Why didn't they?
Well, it says the excuse they used was that they had iron chariots.
And they didn't really say who was in the valley, but iron chariots in the valley.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got the sons of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites.
Okay, so that's 21 through 28?
Yeah, that's verse 21.
Sons of Benjamin. I'm just going to be, a Ben. Sons of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites. And where were they?
In Jerusalem.
And according to this, whenever this was written, they were still there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Manasseh.
What do we know about Manasseh?
It just said the Canaanites that he didn't drive out. And I can't pronounce these cities.
Well, we're not going to put the cities. We know what there's four of them. They have Beth Shean. I'm not going to say these right. I'm going to work on learning
five.
How to say some of these names, but I don't have them. Yeah. It is. Tanakh, Dor, Eglim, and Megiddo. I have to hear it. I can't read it. Okay, so they did not take possession of the land, and the Canaanites were there. What happened to the Canaanites in those lands?
They became slaves?
No. Some of them did.
I said they persisted in living in the land.
They did.
Now, is Canaanites just a catch-all of all the all these little things? Because you got the Jebusites, the Hittites.
Well, the Hittites are different. There are some... There are some that are not Canaanites in the land.
Okay.
Look on your map. The Philistia, I don't think that they're Canaanites. We'd have to look, and probably, I assume, as we go more and more through this, we're going to get more and more aware who the Canaanites were.
Okay.
But they're not all Canaanites, but there are a lot of them that are.
Okay.
And you have, even as you look on your map, you have Gilead, even though I thought that was a Jewish name. They got that as separate. Moab, they're not Canaanites, I don't think. Mm. Edomites and Moabites came from the Lot situation. So I don't think they're Canaanites.
So the Canaanites aren't necessarily just those living in Canaan.
That's what we need to find out.
Yeah.
At this point, we don't really have that information.
Well, I
because Benjamin had Gemini.
And it had said that they were, and it was kind of a word used for foreigners. Not Jewish. And so sometimes, if they didn't know,
like a
they just called them Canaanites. Well, this is what we'll keep on trying to learn about here. Anyone else?
You have Manasseh.
How about verses 29 and 30?
Well, that's Zebulun.
Ephraim.
Okay. What did you learn there?
He did not drive out the inhabitants of Kitron and
Hello. Well, Ephraim, it was the Canaanites and Gezer.
Mm-hmm.
How about Zebulun?
That was what she
Canaanite.
Said.
Canaanite.
And yeah, that's Kitron.
Kitron, the name. You know, I started looking at some of these things, and I don't know how many of you have ever read or seen the Return of the Kings and the
Yeah.
These start sounding like an awful lot of those names. I feel like I've been in battles this week. This is a battle. We went through this series, that series again. I don't think I realized. Of course, we read the books when the kids were little, and it's very different than watching the Lord of the Rings movie. Oh, my gosh. It's so visual, and I don't think it's accurate. I mean, it isn't accurate, but it's, like, grotesque. I never would have taken my kids to that movie. But we read the books to them, so... Anyway,
31, we have Asher.
Asher.
Okay, 31. Asher to 32.
And he didn't drive out a bunch of people.
Yeah, he didn't. And they just, and they again ended up with the Canaanites, okay?
Naphtali. Naphtali. Whatever you pronounce it.
Right. If you're talking to a Jew, all of this is different. And what about Naphtali or Naphtali?
Well, it was the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh or the inhabitants of Beth Anna.
That was sense.
So they didn't get them out.
Mm-hmm. That was sense.
But I didn't see the cities that the groups occupied at that time, so I missed those.
No, that was not.
Anyone else?
Well, the Amorites.
Dan.
Okay, so Dan didn't get out the Amorites.
But the house of Joseph ran them off, so.
Now, did anybody look any further into the house of Joseph?
I didn't
even
know what to look for, really.
Well, you know, even my concordance didn't have House of Joseph. That was kind of weird. But I did find some information, which I'll get to when we get in there. It's well, let's do that now since we have. Let's do some verses. Psalm 81 and 2. Psalm 77, 15 through 16. Psalm 78, and I'll repeat these guys when we go through them. 78, 67. So Psalm 78, verse 67. Ezekiel 38, 16, and I think it's 18. I ran off the road.
Oh, no.
And Ezekiel 47, 13. And 8:32. Amos 5:15. Amos 6:6. And Obadiah 1:18. And this just is a place where it talks about the house of Joseph. It's not kind of. I don't think it's still real clear because I think we'd have to live in the culture to get it. But anyway, you want to start reading the first verse.
What is that one?
Psalm 81 and 2. O give ear, shepherd of Israel, you who lead Joseph like a flock. You who are enthroned above the cherubim, shine forth. Before Ephraim and Benjamin and Manasseh, stir up your power and come to save us.
Okay, so Joseph, what is collected under Joseph in that psalm is who?
Ephraim, Benjamin, Manasseh.
Right. Now, Ephraim is one of the sons of Joseph. Manasseh is one of the sons of Joseph. And they're the tribes that became tribes because of Joseph. But why Benjamin?
Because he was the brother.
He's his brother. So it's that line. So it's a picture of that line. Okay. Your verse is?
77:15-16.
Okay.
Again, what was that?
77.
Psalms.
Sure.
15 and 16. We have one more Psalms after this.
Thou hast by thy power redeemed thy people, the sons of Jacob and Joseph. The waters saw thee, O God. The waters saw thee. They were in anguish. The deeps also trembled.
So in that picture, how was Israel divided? How was the nation divided?
Sons of Jacob and Joseph.
Sons of Jacob and Joseph. So in that picture, when you think about Joseph, how is he being envisioned?
Joseph equal to Jacob.
It's a headship thing. Mm-hmm. They're all under that same umbrella. In fact, we're going to see sometimes when it talks about the house of Joseph, it is talking about Israel. Which is kind of weird, but anyway, I mean, it's just not, we don't think that way, but again, you'd have to take it in the full context of where it's being said. And you have verses?
Psalm 78:67. Moreover, he rejected the tent of Joseph and did not choose the tribe of Ephraim.
Okay, so you have to look in context to see what that's all about. Grace, you look pensive. Go ahead.
Okay, I have Ezekiel 37:16-18. And you, son of man, take for yourself one stick and write on it, for Judah and for the sons of Israel, his companions. Then take another stick and write on it for Joseph, the stick of Ephraim, and all the house of Israel and his companions. Do you want me to read 17 too?
Was that part of it? You read what you think.
Then join them for yourself, one to another, into one stick, that they may become one in your hand. When the sons of your people speak to you, saying, will you not declare to us what you mean by these?
So they were confused, so they were, too.
Yeah.
But what was the division?
The Judah and Joseph were separated, and they wanted to put him into one.
Verse 19 tells it.
Go ahead.
You want me to read 19?
Yeah.
Okay, say to them, thus says the Lord, behold, I will take the stick of Joseph, which is in the hand of Ephraim, and the tribes of Israel, his companions, and I will put them with it, with the stick of Judah, and make them one stick, and they will be one in my hand.
Okay,
so
now.
It was a uniting of
it. But think about this on your map. Where is he talking about when he talks about the sons of Joseph? Give it again, just that verse, Grace.
For Joseph to stick in the, okay. And join for themselves one into another, one stick. So say to them, thus says the Lord, behold, I will take the stick of Joseph, which is in the hand of Ephraim.
Okay, so look where he is on your map.
Where's Ephraim?
Here. And the tribes of Israel, his companions, and I will put them with it, with the stick of Judah, and make one stick, and they will be in my hand. So,
okay,
Judah,
so in the division that came about after Solomon, we have the northern tribes, which are
Israel,
Zebulun, yeah,
Israel. So that's what he's doing. He's actually calling at that point, just in Ezekiel, he's calling the stick of Joseph, basically what we call Israel, the northern tribes, because he's got Ephraim in there and so on and so forth. And the southern tribes are Judah.
Okay.
And he's going to take those two sticks and make them one. So Ezekiel is a book, as you'll get to as we get there, which is specifically talking to Israel, the northern tribes, and the division that they have. You have a pensive look on your face.
what verse
is stick? Do they mean branch?
I
read. Yeah.
Seven.
Okay.
But he says stick
to make sure
because it's like making, it's
yeah,
just a picture.
Yeah,
I could say, antler.
Okay.
Antler together now one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just what they're using. Yeah.
16 through 20.
That's it. What's your verses?
Oh, 13. 47, 13.
Also Ezekiel.
Thus says the Lord God, this shall be the boundary by which you shall divide the land for an inheritance among the 12 tribes of Israel. Joseph shall have two portions.
Which he did. It's just going back to the heritage. Okay, and what is your verse?
48.
What book?
Ezekiel 48:32. And at the east side, 4,503 gates, and one gate of Joseph, and one gate of Benjamin, and one gate of Dan. Let me go up a little bit.
That's the northern, again, the northern tribes.
And the gates of the city, and these are the going out of the city on the north side, 4,500 measures. And the gates of the city shall, after the names of the tribe of Israel, three gates northward, one gate of Reuben, one gate of Judah, and one gate of Levi, and then at the east side, 4,000. What town are they talking about?
I think they're talking about. Is it the new heavens and the new earth there? Why don't you look that?
It's in Ezekiel. Uh-huh. That's the new temple, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they're all going to have a name.
Well, if you go through Numbers, the way the tribes are set up is 3, 3, and 3.
Oh,
so there.
Okay.
So that's what's kind of the picture of, and it's all set up towards the gate and the temple.
So they're going to be on the east side.
Right.
You know, if we go back to Genesis where they had three tribes in east, north, south, and west. So this is what kind of reminds me of that.
It is. And we will get more and more of that again as we start going through the history. We're at this point just setting it all up. Go ahead.
15. Hate evil, love good, establish justice in the gate. It may be that the Lord God of hosts will be gracious to the remnant.
Where was that one you read?
Amos 5:15.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason Joseph is always set aside is his heritage also has that intermixing with Egypt. And because he was such an honorable man, God gave him two of the tribe. And we know that the Levites function separately, so it's all stuff will work.
Amos 6:6. Who drink wine from the sacrificial bowl while they anoint themselves with the finest of oils, yet they have not grieved over the ruin of Joseph.
Which is the northern tribes. Again, that is used, instead of saying Israel, it's using Joseph for the same statement. So we'll just start paying, this is just something I haven't particularly paid attention to before. So now we're going to start, as we see, is he talking about Joseph himself as a human being? Or is he talking about his two sons? Or is he talking about a metaphor? This is a metaphor, and he uses an allegory with them. Okay, go ahead.
Where is the division between the northern tribe and the tribes?
Have to figure out which ones are in the northern tribes and southern tribes, and that's what we're studying. They're not even there yet. We don't even have Jerusalem yet. Until you have Jerusalem, you're not going to see the division. Until you see the kings after Solomon, you're not going to see the division. But Grace from just Joshua. Are all the tribes on the side that's towards the Mediterranean?
No, some on the east.
Really? Mm-hmm. Possibly it starts there. Because they're already divided. And we see in this chapter, where do they set up worship?
Shiloh.
So just start, keep paying attention to that stuff.
Okay, I have Obadiah 1:18.
Which you read every day, right?
Yeah. And if you have a little bit of information, maybe that would explain this a little better. I'll read the verse first. Then the house of Jacob will be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame. But the house of Esau will be a stubble, and they will set them on fire and consume them, so that there will be no survivors of the house of Esau, for the Lord has spoken. So,
I don't want you reading commentary.
Oh. Okay.
Well, this is in your Bible. It's probably really good. What is it? Let's see. Oh, okay. What does it say? It's the intro into it. Okay, go ahead. The reason I always say to be careful with commentaries is we do make commentaries, but not until after we understand what we can glean. But this is really our lesson, so go ahead.
Okay, it says, although the people of Edom, descendants of Esau, and Israel, descendants of Jacob, are related, Amos 1:11-12, biblical history reports many conflicts between them. Look at the map one, which is almost identical. It's identical to this one.
Right.
And notice the proximity of Edom and Edom to Israel. Edom was a constant threat to Israel. Repeatedly blocking the nation and blocking Judean access to the Gulf of Aqaba.
Aqaba, I think it is. It's okay. No, I know what it looks like. It's not that I don't know what it is. I think it's Aqaba, but I'm not sure about that.
So does that kind of...
That's the lower part right down there?
Yeah.
What book did you read, or what?
Obadiah.
Yeah.
So is it saying that, to me that's a good distance, but the Esau folks didn't get to the Mediterranean Sea?
Well, and we have, in that area, we have the Edomites, we have the Amorites, and the Moabites, and they're all related to them, and they're all enemies.
Okay.
Because the Edomites, as you said, came out of the twins, Esau and Jacob. And we have the Lot and his daughters, which are the Amorites and the
Moabites.
Okay.
And so even though they're related, as time goes on, they become enemies. And if it, just as you go through from Genesis to Joshua, as you look there, you see how that progresses. Just in that time from generation, and the separation came years. At the end of Genesis, you've got them going into captivity for 400 years. So there's all that generation, and it's the Jews that went into captivity. So the other people are just inhabiting this area, and this becomes to them their land. So, anything else you want to add here? All right. So who did drive out?
Judah and Simeon, pretty much?
No. Judah didn't.
Judah didn't the valley. He got everybody else. He did Gaza with the territories and Ashkelon with its territories and Ekron with its territories. Verse 18. But
well, Issachar is not mentioned, so they must have driven out. Huh?
Well, Issachar is mentioned in 33. That's the one that isn't mentioned.
No. Mm-hmm. Issachar and Reuben aren't mentioned, so I don't know what that means.
Does that mean they drove out, or is it doesn't, it because just, they weren't mentioned?
They just weren't mentioned. And Reuben is on the other side of the water, as is
Gad.
But Manasseh is
part of Manasseh, yes. Yeah. So part yes, part no.
And Gad, is Gad mentioned?
No.
No.
But he's on the other side,
too. Who would not
drive
them out is God. I will no longer drive out them out before. But who did drive them out?
When they are driven out, we know it is God who drives them out. Why do we know that?
Because he's the one in control.
You've got some verses in other books that are promise verses. Mm-hmm. How about...
Well, it says here Judah went to Simeon.
Yeah, they did help each other.
Yes.
How about Joshua 23, 1 through 13? What did you learn there?
Joshua what?
Joshua 23, 1 through 13. You had it as a cross-reference. It says, now, I'm just going to start verse 1. When it came about after many days, when the Lord had given rest to Israel from all their enemies on every side, and Joshua was old and advanced in years, Joshua called for all Israel, for the elders, and their heads, and their judges, and he said, I am very old in age. What else did he say? He reiterated.
You have seen all that the Lord your God has done to all these nations because of you. The Lord your God is he who has been fighting for you.
So who is doing the fighting?
God.
God is doing the fighting. And what else does he say?
I have divided into your, you by lot, these nations that remain to be an inheritance for you, your tribes from Jordan, with all the nations that I have cut off even unto the great sea westward.
Okay, so he has that, and then he makes a promise in 5.
And the Lord your God, he shall expel them from before you and drive them out of your sight, and he shall possess their land as the Lord your God had promised you.
But then he gives us some exhortations. Verse 6, what is verse 6? What is the exhortation there?
Be very firm then to keep and do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, so that you may not turn aside from it to the right hand or to the left, so that you will not associate with these nations, these which remain among you, or mention the name of their gods, or make anyone swear by them, or serve them, or bow down to them. But you are to cling to the Lord your God, as you have done to this day. For the Lord has driven out great and strong nations from before you, and as for you, no man has stood before you to this day. One of your men puts to flight 1,000, for the Lord your God is he who fights for you, just as he promised you. So take diligent heed to yourself to love the Lord your God. For if you ever go back and cling to the rest of these nations, these which remain among you, and intermarry with them, so that you associate with them, and they with you, know with certainty that the Lord your God will not continue to drive these nations out before you, but they will become a snare and a trap to you, and a whip on your sides and thorns in your eyes, until you perish from all this good land which the Lord your God has given you. That was kind of a prophecy, wasn't it?
It is. It is a prophecy and a promise. Mm-hmm. He says, one, be firm. Mm-hmm. Keep and do all that is written in the book of law. Then he goes and tells you what you can't do. Verse 8, you are to cling to the Lord your God as you have done this day, which is telling us what about those people?
They weren't clinging to the Lord.
Mm-mm. Well, let's take the ones who were. They were clinging. When they were clinging, God did clear the land. And for the Lord has driven out great and strong nations before you. And as for you, no man has stood before you this day. One of your men puts to flight a thousand. For the Lord your God is he who fights for you, just as he promised. So he gives them the exhortation, but he reminds them why. Why?
It'll be a snare if you don't.
Exactly. And then the third one in verse 11 is, so take diligent heed to yourself to love the Lord. So it's diligent heed yourself to love. What is the first commandment?
Love the Lord your God with all your heart.
Why would that be a thing that would, so he says, diligent heed to yourself to love the Lord your God, for if, there's an if there, that for, what is for, what question is for answering?
Why or because.
Why or because. So take diligent heed to yourself to love the Lord your God. Why? For if you ever go back and cling, and he's just talked about cling up in verse 8,
right,
and cling to the rest of these nations, these which remain among you, and intermarry with them so that you associate with them, and they with you, which is going to happen if you let that stay there.
Yeah.
Know with certainty that the Lord your God will not continue to drive these nations out before you. So even though he has a covenant with them that is based on him, and he has set aside this land for them, they are not going to get it if. Doesn't mean it belongs to anybody else. Historically, all the way to eternity, it belongs to Israel. But they're not going to have it. If they don't, be firm and keep to the word of God, cling to the Lord their God, and take diligent heed to love the Lord their God. Know with certainty, that's your then, know with certainty that the Lord your God will not continue to drive these nations out before you, but they will be a snare and a trap to you. Okay, let's take this to our country. Now, our nation is not Israel. So you don't apply this politically the same way you do Israel. God set aside Israel as a nation. But let's take us as a nation. What does this teach us about in our culture, our Western culture? Now much of the Eastern culture is coming in. What does it tell us as a people? Do we still have the same exhortations that God gave Israel?
Israel's responsibility.
Because is there any place that we're not supposed to be firm and keep God's word?
No. Mm-hmm.
Is there any place we're not supposed to cling to the Lord?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any place that we are not to take diligent heed to ourselves to love him with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength?
No.
So those exhortations fit to us to what happens when we don't do that.
It's the same thing. It becomes a snare to us. We end up drawn away from the Lord more to these other things and other gods. And
what could some of that be in our culture? Just
materialism. In America, I see materialism.
Materialism?
But also, it is the way things have gone, where you cannot say bad words about somebody who is in sin because you offend them.
So how did that start? Let's take the materialism, and we'll get to this. How did materialism become a god in this country?
Well, for one thing, it was a sign of prosperity to a lot of people, that they were successful, that you weren't successful unless you had, you know, not just one car, but two.
And every car.
And what?
A certain chicken in every car.
Out of context, you can even find that in the Old Testament.
Uh-huh.
It looks like people who have a lot of money are spiritual people. That is not studying the Bible.
They've been successful. But not spiritual.
Well, spiritual, but not in truth. Not God's truth. Not God's spiritual. All the way through history, I mean, we are a country that has been given a lot. Which, as believers, we know that means we're also responsible for a lot. Have we lived up to that responsibility?
No.
Or have we used it for ourselves? And that, by the way, goes to us as Christians. I think that, you have to understand when I talk about things like this, I'm not saying thou shalt not. I'm just saying be wise. When you watch television, when you watch movies, when you read books, you're getting a philosophy there. One of the greatest things that they did that has now ended up with homosexual marriages is years ago, they had a TV show on something Grace. What is
Will and Grace.
Will and Grace. I knew as soon as they had that, that was there for an agenda. Because, gosh, the homosexuals were such cool people. You know, and Christians were just so cranky. And if you don't watch how Christians are portrayed in movies, in TV, in books, we are the most irritatingly stuck up, snobby,
self-righteous,
boring people who have only one thing on our minds, and it's to make everybody else unhappy.
That's just a Baptist. That's not a Pentecostal.
We just
no,
killed Joel.
So the Pentecostal says a little nuts.
Yeah, usually they do.
And I think used to call them the Holy Rollers.
I never did see anybody roll.
No, I never did. I don't think she
neither. We call them pew jumpers down south.
Although I have pew to jumpers. Say, I had a lady about 400 pounds just about jumped down my back one day at a church service. It was a little scary.
That's
anyway.
You know, as we've gained wealth, back in my day, everybody kind of worked together and put it into one pot with that chicken and had a family. But then as somebody in the family went off to college and got their own stuff, they kept their own stuff, they moved away because they could. And so there was less dependence and teamwork.
Interdependence.
Yeah,
there's a lot of the lack of interdependence, even in the church, like in a church like this, that people have lived there for a while. We actually have to fight for unity, because unity is not a natural thing, but it is a natural biblical thing, because if you are seeking, we all have the mind of Christ, and we are to be seeking the mind of Christ in relating to one another, and we need, as Philippians tells us, to think of one another first. Now, what Israel's getting a picture of initially was their unity, and now we're beginning to see their division. And what causes the division is the same things that cause division in our world, in our stuff, in our country, in our churches. But there's always philosophy there. And philosophy comes in slowly. Just a little here and a little there, and we are in such a visual media-oriented culture that the media, I mean, my own kids who've been raised with truth and did go to college, but so did I, and I was always a radical, can easily say, Mom, you can't talk about things that way. Yes? I can.
I just did.
I'm not even talking about being nasty against. Right. To me, my kids know that if we go out anywhere, Mom's going to talk to everybody. It's just something they've gotten used to. It's not because I'm a people person. I am not. But people need to know about the Lord, and you've got to give chances for that to happen. And I don't mean I talk to everybody about the Lord. I do not do that because not everybody's open. But kindness. I'm a Christian. I'm supposed to be carrying kindness with me. But those very same things that when Chris will say to me, I don't understand how you can say this about homosexuality on one hand and be able to talk to a homosexual person who doesn't care. Well, I do. That's the point. They don't get that. Because the world has told them something about Christians, and they have bought the world's lie. But then they have us that irritates that lot. Yeah, both of you.
I heard the definition of toleration the other day. Toleration, or the word tolerate, has changed.
Right.
It used to be that you did not agree with a person, but you were kind to that person. Now tolerant means you have to agree and approve.
Approve it. Right.
So what we used to consider tolerant,
so right there,
it's not there now.
The dictionary has changed the word. The culture has changed the word. And the younger y'all are, the less you've lived through that, but some of us have lived through watching that happen. And so that's the kind of thing when, okay, so here you have Israel. They're with Joshua. They're getting truth. What has that group of people seen and heard?
They've seen all the things that God has done for them.
They've seen his works.
Yeah,
and they've
Jericho
heard
and all that stuff.
And they've heard him. There was actually a place I took that out of even. Here it is, verse 10 in chapter 2. All that generation were gathered to their fathers, and there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord, nor yet the work which he had done for Israel. Now, does that mean that the parents did not teach those kids?
Well, they didn't take it in to be their own word. Is what it means.
So you could have taught and taught and taught, and that generation didn't know God, nor did they, nor yet the work which he had done for Israel. Which means they didn't ask questions.
Or they weren't listening, or
they didn't ask questions, they weren't listening,
or
they were.
They took it for granted.
They took it for granted because that was the heritage they had, and they didn't have to go through all the fighting.
So they thought they were spiritual grandchildren.
Which, by the way, Israel still bears that as the chosen people.
But my question was,
believing they're somehow different because they are the chosen people.
Is this the second generation or the third generation?
Just said when the...
Well, that generation.
That generation.
Joshua was...
The second generation.
The second generation.
So this would be the third generation.
It's the second generation from leaving...
From
Egypt. That generation never made it to the promised land. There were only two that did, Joshua and Caleb. Then
the kids of that generation.
They're children of that generation.
So that would make those children the third generation now.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be kind of like...
But if you look at it from Egypt, the third generation from Egypt.
Right. It would be kind of like people today... just because they're Americans, they say they're Christians.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, we're a Christian nation. Well, show me how.
We can't go through chapters 17 through 21 and not get that. Good grief. We have all the trappings of religion there and actually almost no reality.
Well, like you were saying, in America today, today's Veterans Day, and those of us who are kind of from the World War II era and stuff, you know, and Korean War and those things,
the babies
that lived through our parents, that lived through the Depression, stuff like that. Well, the generation today is several removed from that, and it's no big deal.
What is
that? A day off from school.
Yeah.
Go to the bank. Darn.
This is why you can still have skinheads in Germany, because they don't believe Hitler really existed, and it's being taught all over the world that Hitler really didn't exist. That didn't happen.
And there was no Holocaust.
No.
That's
right.
What I mean. None of that ever happened. And there are really people who believe that. Why? Yeah. Because they didn't live through it. They aren't paying attention
to
their history books.
They don't want to believe it.
They don't believe it.
They're rebellious.
It's so awful.
Another thing, too, was they were going to have, I can't remember what school it meant or whatever, but they were going to have an honoring the veterans in a church. And they wanted to, and they started out refusing to have the flag and the Pledge of Allegiance said, well, because it was in a church. Now, what that meant, I'm not really sure.
Who?
It was some, I can't, that's...
Well, what I'm asking is, who said they couldn't?
Well,
church and state, got it.
Yeah, yeah. It was the promoter from the school that was the one that was... But the kids all rose up and said no, and they finally did allow... They took the flag and said the Pledge of Allegiance.
The problem with that is the inverse of that is going to be the kids are going to reject the church and take the flag. So, Oh, that's such a great...
But anyway, it was just one of those achievement. Other yeah. areas where yeah. you see...
Well, and that is very much... Well, if that's inverse, too, because it was initially, the Constitution was to protect the church from mm-hmm. the state, and now right. it's to protect the state from the church.
That's exactly
where did we get that one, and why do we not look at our history books and read the thing? Anyway...
Well, history's wrong, you know. They're finding out that all that stuff in the history books was wrong.
It's revisionist history, my dear. And this is revisionist. We do it even with things that we see. We just re-identify. And we can do that as people. I don't like what that did. It hurt, and I'm just going to change. I had a friend one time who I walked through her life, so I know what went. You know her, too, what went on. And when she would tell the stories, they would be absolutely opposite of what happened. And her husband and I were both standing there looking at her like, but that's what she could live with. So what's wrong with that picture?
It's not true. It's not true.
It's not reality.
What's wrong with that picture?
It leads you to
turning
wrong.
Back to self and denying what actually happened. So.
Okay, you just said it. Turning into what?
Turning back to self.
This was a Christian. What was she not turning to?
God.
We need to remember that, guys.
And not learning all that God had allowed her to walk through.
Okay, so...
Wasted desert.
When you go through war, like they went through with Joshua, you have one of two choices. You let the tribulation, the trials, clean you.
Do what?
You let the trials clean you. In fact, God says he's doing what? He's...
Cleansing
and testing.
Purifying.
He's mm-hmm. testing for a reason. Okay, we'll get to that too in a minute. But, and what does testing do? It purifies. It is to purify. So if you are not going to God, but you are being tested, which you will, what is the outcome of that going to be?
If you're not going to God, you're going to go to self.
You're
going to
fail the test.
You're going to fail the test. You're going to go to blindness. You're going to call it other things. You can become bitter. And all of us can do that, ladies. There are areas in our lives that are hard to give to God. And if nothing else, we need to learn from this, which we are reading, how to overcome and take the land for the Lord. Because that's the lesson here for us. Because we have enemies. And I'm not talking about people out there, but there's that too. I'm talking about how we filter it all. How we say yes or no to it all. How do we really seek the Lord? Why doesn't every Christian really study the Bible? Because it's hard work.
Because it points out things. It's sharper than a two-edged sword. It points out things that you really don't want to face and admit that they're there.
So we'll just take out some of the land. We'll go get the ones that are a little easier.
Yeah.
But when the hard ones come, where they have chariots.
Of iron.
In the valley of in iron, I don't want that. I don't want to fight that hard.
Well, the bigger issue is they were not looking to God because they couldn't do it anyway.
Okay, that's
God
the
was
big
the
issue.
One, and they weren't doing those three things that you listed under their responsibility.
So, what were all these things supposed to be doing?
They're teaching them to depend on God. God was trying to get them to go to Him to
live
purely.
He had said what?
Because he was going to be the one to drive them out.
He's the one who drives them out. He's the one who made the promise. He's the one who had the land set aside for them. So what is the problem?
Unbelief.
They were doing it on their own.
Unbelief.
Well, in sin.
Unbelief. Yeah, Grace.
Yeah, just said me. You know.
Well, they wanted.
We are the problem.
They wanted their forced labor. They were enjoying that, guys. I mean,
that's probably true.
Yeah.
That's just and we know what happened to Rome when they trusted the forced laborers.
Well,
they
ended
lost
up,
it.
You know, they ended up so far down that they were marrying and
certainly,
then worshiping the foreign gods, which really put them in a...
But you know what?
And the Canaanites had beautiful women.
Well, there you go. And men in their eyes.
Yeah.
What is amazing, even within all of that, the Lord still took out of those nations people who believe. We look at them. We're going to do next the story of Ruth. Ruth is not an Israelite. Rahab was not an Israelite, and yet God used these women in the history of Israel. In fact, in the lineage of Jesus. So as we see the dark, let's remember there's still light there, too. Okay, so let's look at chapter 2. Did I say everything we wanted to say on that? I'm just going to hit Deuteronomy 7, 1 and 2 and 16 and 22 just to remember what was there, kind of the promises if. God said, when the Lord your God brings you to the land where you enter into possessing, clears away many nations before you, the Hittites, the Gergesites, the Amorites, and these are all things that were promised back there in Genesis, the Canaanites and the Perizzites. See, that's the ones that are separate. Look at that. That's your separate nations. Hivites and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and stronger than you. And when the Lord your God delivers them before you and you defeat them, then you shall utterly destroy them. You shall make no covenant with them and show no favor. Verse 16, you shall consume all the peoples whom the Lord your God will deliver to you. Your eye shall not pity them. That's a hard one, ladies. That is a very hard one. We get squishy here. And women particularly get squishy. So who are the ones who are supposed to go out to battle? Not us, and for a darn good reason. We're squishy. We get compassionate. We get, well, not this person. They were so nice. They were my neighbor, you know. These nations are greater than I. How can I dispose of them? You shall not be afraid of them. You shall remember what the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and all of Egypt. So what are they supposed to be doing? Remember, remember, remember. Why do we have communion? To remember. Verse 19. The great trials which the Lord your God saw, and the signs and the wonders and the mighty hand and the outstretched arm by which the Lord your God brought you out from Egypt, shall the Lord your God do to all the peoples of whom you are afraid. In other words, what he did to Egypt, he will do to their enemies. Verse 21, you shall not dread them. Do we dread our enemies?
Yes.
How about ISIS? Any of you have a little fear there? That's their whole thing, is they try and make us all afraid of them. They know how to conquer is to put fear in them. And what is our response to them? Well, you know, they're really not really that bad of people. And,
oh, yeah.
And you know, maybe we ought to let some of them come and live in our country. And,
and behead us.
Well, and change our laws.
Yeah.
Change our laws. Sharia law is coming, guys. You shall not dread them, for the Lord your God is in your midst, a great and awesome God. So if we are dreading, where are our eyes?
On our enemies.
On our enemy. On our fear. Where are our eyes supposed to be?
On the Lord.
There's your list. The Lord your God will clear away these nations before you little by little. You will not be able to put an end to them quickly, for the wild beasts will grow too numerous for you. But the Lord your God will deliver them before you and will throw them into great confusion until they are destroyed. So why do you think God takes so long? Yes, we talked about the wild animals, but that's just part of it. Why does God take so long?
It's his timing.
It is his timing. What is his purpose?
Wants to teach us.
He wants to teach us to trust him. How do we learn to trust him?
By going through it.
By trial after trial after trial.
And waiting patiently.
Which is a trial.
Tell me about it.
And where are your eyes supposed to be?
On God.
On the Lord. And when you take your eyes off the Lord, what happens? We dread, we fear, we lose it. This is throughout history, guys.
And make bad mistakes.
Okay, so we already did that. Let's go to Judges 2 now. Did you write idolatry in the margins of verses that you saw? Okay, just give me some. We'll come back to. What did we learn in verse 2?
As for you, you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of the land. You shall tear down their altars, but you have not obeyed me. What is this you have done?
So the idolatry is beginning to... He doesn't really tell us what it is here. Oh, yes, it does. Yes. What is the idolatry?
They broke the covenant. They didn't tear down the altars, so they're worshiping idols.
And, let's see... And when we don't drive them out, what do they become? Verse 3.
Snare,
thorns in our side. Their gods will become a snare to us. What God did you talk about in the beginning? Joy, what was the God we talked about in the beginning?
Materialism.
Materialism. We can start writing lists of here. Is that historic? Where do you think that came from? Let's go back and see.
Looking at the fruit.
Yeah, I have all this amazing fruit around here, but that one I can't have.
You've already done it.
So that's the only one I really want. How many times have we done that? You know, years ago, I used to wonder why God could never give us a new car. Kept giving us old cars. Now all of a sudden, it's like, so what's the point of having a car? I'm getting from A to B. Can I get from A to B in an old car? Yeah. See, I grew up in a house where my dad sold cars, so we always had a new car. So it isn't the same story for you. For me, it was that. It was just I was never used to having anything older than 2 years old cars. And all of a sudden, we're having 15-year-old cars.
There have been times when I haven't gotten where I needed to go.
Well, see, that's the other part. My question is, okay, I don't care about the old car, but make it work. Please, have it work. I was in the beginning of our marriage, the car would always break down when it was just me way out in the middle of nowhere. In the dark. We lived out in the middle of nowhere, so that wasn't too hard. So that became my next. Please, please, God, please. Pardon?
I feared whenever I saw a police car because either my license wasn't correct, my tail light was out, it was smoking too much. I mean, I actually went, oh no, a police, there must be after me.
Yeah, you're such a wild woman.
And I knew my car was going to, we had such a crummy car.
You know what? Just as a humor, could you remind me of this? My sister and I, one time when we were kids, I was old enough to drive, so I must have been like 16, and I actually did have a car, which I didn't really hardly ever use because my parents really didn't want us to, but we took the car in the middle of the night because we wanted to see the star. We wanted to see the sunrise. So we go up, and we lived in an area with high mountains, kind of like our area here, but more visible, where you couldn't there today, there's too much smog, but where we could see the whole thing come up, it was magnificent. Well, we're coming back home just before it would have been time for my parents to get up, right? And somebody had seen us leave, but they didn't know who we were. They just thought we were thieves, because we pushed the car down the road. We didn't start it. And so we're up there, we come back down, and we got literally hit by 4 police cars. You know, oh boy, we didn't get away with that one too well. And they're ready to take us in for stealing, because this person who called them in said we were robbing somebody's house or something. Here's my sister, who's like, how old was I? 16, so she's 11. And we're both in our pajamas.
Great.
Really look like thieves, you know. And she is ready to confess to anything that anybody has ever done. I mean, if we'd asked her if she was there when Hitler killed the Jews, she would have confessed to it. Can't confess to everything. Can't expect everything. It was just too funny. By the time we got in the house, it wasn't so funny. And I really never did bad things. It wasn't the guy finally figured out. We were just kids who wanted to go look at the sunrise. All right, so did you see, or where are some of the other places they talked about it that you marked for idolatry?
Verse 11.
Okay, what did we see in 11?
They served the Baal.
The sons of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served. Do you know who the Baals were?
Yeah, they were a bunch Jezebel worship.
The word also, we also had the word evil used. Was the word evil used anywhere else in the book?
No. That's what I've seen.
In the chapter, it is used
of
God.
Yeah, it's used a lot.
God doing evil to them. Yes. Verse 15. Because what did they do in verse 15? Well, no, actually, this is where he's talking about what he did.
He was angry with them in 14.
Okay, so if they did evil in the sight of the Lord and God did evil to them, is that the same kind of evil?
No. God's justice.
The word itself has 12 different connotations. The word, and I looked it up, the word in 15 is really talking about, actually, it's a different word. It's a masculine noun meaning friend. A friend of the king as a personal advisor. It refers to context. A person with a personal and official attachment to another person promotes his or her welfare. It indicates someone who has shown support. Now you read that and go, what does that have to do with that word? That word is because God is doing what he's doing for their best. And even though we look at it as for evil, because when we see pain, what do we think? It's bad. I mean, we've just talked about the difficult situations here, even when we started class. And we're praying for your husband's salvation. If God uses this thing, we look at it as evil. But if he uses, yes, we know you're there and we do love you. If it's the thing that pushes him towards the Lord, is that evil? But anytime we have sickness in our culture, we look at it as evil. Instead of seeing it as the challenge that God has given us as a tool to pray into somebody's life. Because we want everything here to go well. Just like they wanted in Israel. We have to fight, but I don't want to fight dying scary guys, you know? I want to just fight the guy who goes, yes, we give up. So,
get your sister.
So sometimes we can just...
My sister. Tough times. Different now. Let's look at verses 11 through... What was that?
I think the word evil, doesn't it just sometimes in the days of, you know, difficulty? Because, you know, it talks about as we get older. In the scriptures.
Yep, these and old days are evil.
Those days are evil, and so I saw it as the difficult times.
Well, they are evil in the sense that we all felt. And anytime God has to chastise us, that looks pretty evil. But it's there because of sin. And it's there because he is taking us to another place. You know, I mean... Years ago, my dear friend Alice used to always pray that God would expose her sin and clean her. And I'm going, I don't know if I want it. Because, you know, I do want it gone, but if I start praying that, he's actually going to keep. I know there's just muck after muck, and I didn't want to do that. I do now. The difference is I've grown to know the Lord. And what he does for good. What I have him still pictured like my dad, who did things to hurt. You know, you step on a crack, you break your mother's back. I was pretty sure God was going to break my mother's back if I screwed up somewhere. But that's not the God of heaven, and that's not the God of the Bible. But it is the God that they understood. Mm-hmm. He was wishy-washy. They pretty much thought he was wishy-washy, and he told them, don't be wishy-washy. Okay, so take verse from verse 11. We're going to watch a sequence here. What did Israel do? They did evil. And they, in fact, start with verse 10, because I really think it starts there. All generations were gathered to their fathers, and there arose another generation after them. What?
Didn't know God.
So this is the downward spiral. They didn't know God, and they didn't know what he did. Mm-hmm. Could they have?
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
we had Levites. They were teaching.
They could have heard about it, but they're past what he actually did.
And we do know there are some in there that did, but not all of them. The majority didn't. Okay, so we have, they did know God. Did I put that up there? Well, just keep it in mind. Verse 10 on. They didn't know God, they didn't work. What in verse 11?
They served the Baal.
Okay, they did evil, and they served the Baals. Verse 12.
They forsook the Lord.
They forsook the Lord.
Actually, they didn't have him to start with, so. Whatever.
Well, he was the God of their fathers, so yeah. Basically they're forsaking their heritage, aren't they? Who brought them out of the land of Egypt.
And they followed other gods.
This is just so amazing to me. It just is so amazing to me. Do we do the same thing in this culture?
Sure.
How about our kids?
Well, they certainly do different than what they were taught.
Yeah.
But it says other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were around them.
Which tells us what? What did they do?
They fraternized.
Yeah. And he told them to eliminate.
Yeah.
Because if they didn't, they'd become what?
A snare.
So they'd become a snare.
And they bowed down to them, which was even worse.
Well, you know, they don't. Those gods don't expect so much, and all I have to do is a list of things, and then I'm okay. Where God the
pass.
Where God of heaven wants everything, every moment of every day, and He wants to clean my very soul out, and He knows who I am, so nobody can get there like He does. So, what did they? What was their response then? What was God's response?
The Lord was angry.
They provoked Him, didn't they, with what they were doing? They worshipped in essence.
And they forsook.
So that's verse 13. So they forsook and again, and the Ashtaroth. You know what the Ashtaroth is? That's different from Baal.
Female.
These are things you need to ask. Yes, you need to ask yourself these questions. Why is He saying this?
Female.
It's a female god who is the goddess of love, war, and fertility, and by the way, has been causing Israel problems from the beginning. Israel often was apostatized by I'm not going to be able to say it. From the Lord, and they turned away from the Lord and worshipped her. We saw it in Judges. We'll see it again in 10:6. 1 Samuel, we're going to see it. And even Manasseh named a city after her. Okay, so we come to verse 14. Anything there we learn?
The Lord was angry.
He was angry. Why?
Because they were serving Baal.
And what did He do?
Gave them into the hands of plunderers, sold them into the hands of their enemies.
Why?
So they could no longer stand before their enemies.
What does that mean?
They got weak and were over.
Well, when they stand, if I'm standing before you like this, Grace, what am I doing?
You're above her.
I'm above you. I'm bigger than you.
You're the
something,
leader.
I'm something to be afraid of.
Yeah, I can do that. Standing up with you.
You get on the chair.
She can do it while I'm standing up.
No, most people can't.
I think that's why the Lord made me tall, to tell you the truth.
He stopped delivering them from the enemies. He stopped helping them conquer them. Yeah. He just stopped. You're on your own.
Because of this list we just saw. Because of that list we just saw.
Because they had turned from Him.
And He had told them He would do this if. Mm-hmm. It isn't, you can have the land if. The land is already yours, but you can't own it. You can't inhabit it. It can't belong to you unless you obey, because I'm the one who's cleaning the land off. It's the same way with all of our stuff, guys. It doesn't matter what it is. He is the only one who can deal with and eliminate these things. So what was their response in verse 15?
They were severely distressed.
Because they didn't. Don't you see a little hissy fit of a 3-year-old?
Yeah.
They didn't get their own way. They're going to be distressed.
But He had told them and told them and told them, and they still didn't get it.
It wasn't like
He swore to them what He would do, and they still got distressed.
So the Lord had to use His hand against them, and that was their response. Whiny little 3-year-old. Throwing a hissy fit, which, by the way, sometimes I can look like at times.
Yeah.
But I think it was more than that. They actually were in really bad straits.
Oh, they were.
It wasn't just throwing a little fit. They were, you know, captive to the enemy. They were being killed.
But they knew how to get out of it.
They did.
So it was a hissy fit.
Well, they didn't do the right thing. They're suffering the consequences.
So they're angry at God, in essence, for, well, gosh, you did all this for Joshua, but what about us? Well, I told you how to get there, and you're not listening. What happened in verse 16? What did the Lord then do as a response to their situation and their severe distress?
The Lord had compassion on them.
He did. He did have compassion on them. He raised judges who were to do what?
Deliver them.
From?
Those who plundered them, their enemies.
Yet what?
They did not listen.
If they're not going to listen to God, they're not going to listen to the judges. For they what?
Played the harlot after other gods, bowed themselves down, turned aside quickly from the way in which their fathers had walked in obeying the commandments of the Lord. They did not do as their fathers.
So they had an example. Verse 18, what else? When God raised up the judges, what else? What do we learn about God?
Well, the Lord was with the judges.
Yeah.
And?
Delivered them. And
the Lord was moved to pity by their groanings because of those who oppressed and afflicted them.
Be interesting to look up that word, pity, by their groanings because of those who oppressed and afflicted them. So for anybody who reads the Old Testament and thinks God has no heart, that verse proves that wrong. But what? Verse 19. Here's another.
Judges don't live forever, and when they died, they went right back to their old ways.
Even?
More corruptly.
Mm. How can somebody who obeyed at one point become more corrupt?
Well, those who have been given light, if they fail, they turn, they become more dark.
So it's truth. They got the truth, and they rejected the truth, and they turned back to their old ways. Sort of like the pig to the mud kind of picture. So then verse what? Oh, it says they did not abandon their practices or their stubborn ways. But what? Verse 20.
So the anger of the Lord burned against Israel, and he said, because this nation has transgressed my covenant which I commanded their fathers and has not listened to my voice, I will no longer drive out before them any of the nations which Joshua left when he died.
And has he ever since?
No.
What was the purpose of this?
In order to test Israel by them, whether they keep the way of the Lord to walk in it as their fathers did or not.
So what is the purpose of trials?
To test them to see if they'll keep the way of the Lord and to walk in it.
You go one way or the other. You either walk towards the truth or you walk away from it. Anybody look up the word test?
No. I never heard the test.
Said this is the same word that is used throughout many places in the Old Testament. It shows 40 times. It is used with Abraham. God tested Abraham in Genesis 21:1. God tested the nation of Israel in multiple verses. God tested Hezekiah in Chronicles. God tested David in Psalms. And that although people were forbidden from putting God to the test, they often did so. He warns us of that, doesn't he? How would we put God to the test?
Well, if you do this, I will do that.
Or if you do this, then...
Or
define him, or if you do this, then I know you are God. Which is, who's in control of that one?
Well,
me. Whenever I tell God, if I lay out a fleece and says, I'll believe you if this, that puts me in charge. It's not about me. God doesn't have to prove anything to me. Why not?
He's God.
Because he's God. Has he proved himself?
Yes.
Over and over. He did to Israel. He has to Christianity. He sent Jesus. Does God love you?
Yes.
Sometimes it may not look like that if we have a value system that is based on my comfort, my materialism, accumulating, my health. Can God love me and I be very unhealthy?
Of course.
It was the very act of Pastor Dan losing his leg that brought him to the Lord. Would he change that? Well, he'd like it to feel better, I'm sure, but it's those testings that draw us to truth. They are to try and to prove. They clean off the lies. They clean off the garbage. Okay, verse 23, so what did he say?
He allowed the nations to remain. And he did not give them into the hand of Joshua.
That statement is weird to me.
Yes, it is.
I'm not comfortable with what that means yet, but reality. Maybe Joshua was standing for all of Israel. I don't know.
Well, he didn't allow the nations to remain.
Yeah, that's...
I'm sorry, he allowed the nations to remain.
And he did not drive them out quickly. So
he did not.
He took his sweet time. He's still taking his sweet time.
And outside of the fact that they have inhabited every place they were given, they never...
Owned it.
Because there's always been
a
fault.
And now they don't inhabit most of what they were given.
No. Gee, would it be the same reason? A lack of faith? Most of the Jewish culture...
They think they have strong faith.
They have faith in Judaism. There are the Orthodox, and that's different. That is a whole different ball of wax. But
the main ones that go there today think of, you know, to take back their homeland. They're following their traditions.
They own it. It belongs to them.
Yeah.
But do they believe in God?
No. They're following tradition more of what the Pharisees and the Sadducees did.
Well, there is a blindness. We have to remember, guys, there is a blindness over Israel because this is the time of the Gentiles, which we'll get to in Zechariah, not before then.
That could be ending sooner than we think.
Well, if it does and we don't finish studying this whole thing, then I think we'll be okay.
We'll know it on the way up.
Yeah. Ooh, that's how it all went together, all those little puzzle pieces. Okay, so let's hit Judges 17 through 21. Tell me about Micah in chapter 17, and what did you title this chapter, or what did you see?
That's the part I didn't think of.
Well, Micah was not a very wise man.
No.
What did he do first to his mother?
He stole
silver
from her.
Mm-hmm.
And being, again, a squishy person, instead of holding them accountable, when he told her he did, what'd she say?
Well, thank you for confessing
that.
She
gave it back to him.
Yeah.
She gave it to him to do what?
To
make a graven image and a molten image.
Amazing.
And so
200.
So he had a graven image and a molten image in the house of Micah. And then what happened? And a shrine. I like this. He made an ephod and a household idol and consecrated one of his sons. Anybody know what consecrated means there?
Set apart.
Well, that's kind of what it's supposed to mean. So how would he consecrate a son? He just kind of turned him into the priest.
Yeah, you will be the priest. I need one. You're going to be it.
Yeah.
You'll work.
So are we kind of like not paying any attention to
right
how a priest becomes a priest?
Yeah,
well, this is
like
his
the Levites.
So this is, and they were. Okay.
We're going to study this later, by the way.
He might become his priest, so it sounds like it was his personal priest.
Well, of course, because he has his own personal
shrine
and idols.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it something? The thing that struck me about all of this is how he's mixing everything together. A little bit of what he's been taught, maybe about what the priests are supposed to be and everything. Now he's still got some of this idol stuff in there, and he's kind of mixing it all together.
Because he kind of listened to the culture.
Don't we do that today?
Pushed it all in.
Yeah, we do it today.
Every man did what was right in their own self.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's our verse in verse 6. There were mm-hmm. no king in Israel. Every man did what was right in his own eyes. So there's no. There is no continuity.
No,
is there a law? Do they have the law?
This is after the law, isn't it?
So they have the law. So what does that tell you
no
about their relationship
the
to the law?
Well, they don't really know it.
What does that first one tell us?
Keep God's word.
Yeah. Keep God's word. They weren't keeping God's word.
It sounds like they knew bits and pieces.
Well, it's sort of like the story of when you were a little kid and you hear the story of David and Goliath and you walk away. What do you walk away with?
The little guy beat the big guy.
The little guy beat the big guy with a
stone.
Stone.
Mm-hmm. Do you have the context of what that means?
No.
I mean, who is this David? What did he become? Mm-hmm. Why did he do that to this? Well, he was a big guy, but no, not necessarily the context of his faith. Or that picture, or his life, or where he fit, or any of that. You just have a story. So if I have somebody who's my enemy, I can go out with a slingshot and wipe them out, can't I?
Yeah, David did it. I can do
that.
I'm
glad I'm your friend.
Well, you're assuming I could actually do that very well. I'd probably get myself with it.
He knew he needed a priest here, so he recruited his son.
Yeah, you know, and
you got
to, now,
well,
verse 7, there was a young man of the family of Judah who was a Levite.
And so when a Levite came along,
I don't know how he was of the family of Judah and was a Levite. That's a little off the law, too.
Yeah.
Now, what did he do with him?
Made him a priest.
Yeah, he did. Well, he was a Levite, supposedly.
Well,
he made him his personal Levite mm-hmm. priest of Judah.
Yeah, so the Levite didn't know no better either.
Yeah, I know.
He was
well,
the Levite.
Well,
he did
the rest of them because then what happens? Yes? Go ahead.
He asked to stay with Micah, and so he came to live with the man, and he be, became like one of his sons, so Micah consecrated him.
So he was also consecrated.
And the young man became his priest and lived in the house of Micah. He says, now I know the Lord will prosper me, seeing I have a Levite.
Because what is a Levite? He's the magic talisman. Mm-hmm. Rub the genie and get God to do what you want him to. You have your own personal Levite. You know now God is going to listen to you.
A little bit of what should be.
You got, Colin's got the picture of he is the idol.
Hi, Mike.
That's kind of funny, actually.
Did you say we were going to study the dynasty, the Levites, and the Aaronic priests?
No, we've supposedly already done that, but we can bring it up in various and sundry things. Even in Hebrews, if you want to look at that, go to Hebrews 5-ish, 5, 6, 7, all the way up to 10. The difference between the Aaronic priests and the Levitical priests, or the priests. All of the tribe of Levite were priests, but they were not all... Well, I'm not going to go into that now. But no, yes and no, we'll touch bases on it. I assume what it did say is chapters 7 through 21 will be touched on again as the last of our study. So we, even though we don't have all the details yet. All right, so tell me about chapter 18.
There was no king of Israel.
There was no king again.
And the Danites were seeking an inheritance since they had not been given one.
Which we're wondering what the heck that means.
But they didn't drive them out.
And we haven't really covered all of that because that's the chapters in between that we haven't gotten to yet. But they were given an inheritance. They just, what they're saying is nobody got it for us. So until that day, the inheritance had not been allotted to them as possession among the tribes of Israel. So what did Dan do with Micah?
Sent spies.
They took him away. They stole the idols and took him away.
And they said, they went near the house of Micah, they recognized the voice of the young Levite. They turned aside. How did they recognize the voice of one? Anyway, they turned aside and said, who brought you here? What are you doing in this place? And what do you have here? And what did he say?
Thus and so has Micah done to me.
I like the thus and so. That covers a lot of territory you don't have to explain.
Right.
And he has hired me, and I have become his priest. And they said to him, inquire of God, please, that we may know whether our way on which we are going will be prosperous. The priest said to them, go in peace. Your way in which you are going has the Lord's approval.
How he knows that, who has any clue.
Then the five men departed and came to Laish and saw the people who were in it living in security after the manner of the Sidonians, quiet and secure. For there was no ruler humiliating them.
I like that line. There's no ruler humiliating them.
And they were far from the Sidonians and had no dealings with anyone. When they came back to their brothers at Zora and Estaol, the brothers said to them, what do you report?
What did they say?
Arise and let us go up against them, for we have seen the land, and behold, it's very good. And will you sit still? Do not delay to go to enter to possess the land.
So what did they do then?
When my voice comes back.
Anybody can add to this. There was a secure people with suspicious land, but they came and what did they take? Where did they go?
In the verse 11, from the family of the Danites and Zora and whatever that other guy is, 600 men armed with weapons of war set out. They went up and they camped around that town of Judah. Therefore they call the place this new name to this day. Behold, it is west of the old name.
You know, this and that.
They passed from there to the hill country of Ephraim and came to the house of Micah. So here we go again.
So what was their goal? Micah was their goal, going through all of this. It was Micah that, and why?
And the five men who went to spy out the country of Lachish said to their kindred, do you know that there are in this house an ephod, and household idols, and a graven image, and a molten image?
Therefore consider what you should do. They turned aside there and came to the house of the young man, the Levite, to the house of Micah, and asked him of his welfare.
Yeah, right.
The 600 men, armed with their weapons of war, who were of the sons of Dan, stood at the entrance of the gate. They're waiting to see what happened. Then the camera spans over to the five spies who went to the land and went up and entered there and took the graven image and the ephod and the household idols and the molten image, while the priest stood at the entrance of the gate with the 600 men armed for the weapons of war.
You can tell he was really protecting Micah.
Yeah.
When these men went into Micah's house and took the graven image and the ephod and the household idols and the molten image, the priest said to them, "What are you doing? Stop it." They said to him, "Be silent.
Put your hand
over your mouth and come with us and be to us a father and a priest."
Ooh,
it is better for you to be a priest
upgrade.
To the house of one man, or to be a priest to a tribe and a family of Israel. And the priest goes, "Oh, well, let's move up to the bigger church."
Wahoo! Materialism.
They might pay more.
Materialism.
The priest's heart was glad. He took the ephod, the household idols, and the graven image and went among the people. "I'm moving on up." Then they turned and departed and put the little ones and the livestock and the valuables in front of them. Now, I think that's bad doings.
Yeah, you what have? Who's why did they do that?
Get killed off first.
Yeah.
Those little ones.
Yeah.
Well, they're traveling with their families.
They went out to war.
Yeah, that's what that surprised me too.
They did back then, Monty.
I guess it's better than visiting the harlots.
So it wasn't the little ones of that household.
No, it was the warriors.
I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Are we sure what little ones means in that context?
I guess we could probably look that one up, huh?
Maybe they were short.
Maybe that's what I'm not
really sure. Maybe we said our 18-year-old
idols. The little ones.
If they put the little ones and the livestock in front of them,
they were going to possess
have
some land.
Have we seen this historically?
Yeah. You know, when somebody comes up to them and sees all this livestock and little people or whatever,
they're not at war. Esau and Jacob did
and
that
they let
Esau.
Their
guard down.
Guard down.
Right, because they don't look like they're coming to war. Like you said, who would take their families to war? Well, they have subterfuge here.
Yep.
And they're really not at war. They just want to take the idols and the priest and et cetera. Anyway, so then verse 27. We saw about Micah. You can read in there, and then we're just going to stop with that because I really don't want to get into the story of the concubine being degraded. We'll get it at the end. They took Micah, what Micah had made, and the priest who belonged to him, and came to Laish, and to a people quiet and secure, and struck them with the edge of the sword, and they burned the city with fire. That's what the five men who went out there looked and thought, well, these people are easy mark.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any reason they did this?
They wanted to.
They just did it because they could. This wasn't God saying, let's take this land. This was them with a peaceful people.
Yes, the people were. Quiet and secure.
They were quiet and secure, and they didn't have a ruler because they weren't being degraded by him.
Kind of like the Jews back in the day when they came in and were just taken away.
Yeah.
And like they want to have, they take away our guns. They want us like that.
Pacified.
Yes.
Well, ladies, we do lesson number 2 next week. This is just an interesting way of studying. We've never quite, even with Joshua, didn't quite study this way, but let's go and find out who those first judges are and what we can learn from them. This is where it starts getting interesting. Let's just close in prayer.
Whoa. You okay?
Yeah, I have vertigo, honey. It's just normal. Lord God, we just do stand before you. We sit before you. We lay before you. Our heart is fixed on Jesus. Lord, teach us, continue to love your Son, to walk with him in the Spirit, to be merciful to a world that is in bondage because they don't belong to you. Let us not fear. Take the fear from us, Lord, for perfect love, yours, casts out all fear. We trust you, Lord, and we want to grow in that trust. In the name of Jesus, amen.
So, I didn't figure out.